Sunday afternoon.
Quiet, please. Ladies and gentlemen.
You ready for the big show?
In exactly 15 seconds, we'll be on the air.
Lars. This is the Lars Larson Show.
President Trump is one badass president. He secured the border at a level we've never seen before.
Honestly provocative talk with Lars Larson.
For our country and for our children, the best is yet to come.
Broadcasting across the Pacific Northwest and covering Oregon, Washington, and Idaho on the Radio Northwest Network.
Lars.
And now.
He is an existential threat to democracy.
Here's your host.
Quiet, please.
Lars Larson.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It's Conspiracy Theory Thursday, and it's my pleasure to be with you. We got to talk about the fact that in Washington State, right after the passage by the legislature of the so-called millionaire's tax, the one that Governor Bob Ferguson has been holding back his signature on, it, not just because he doesn't oppose it at all. Now, Bob Ferguson is holding it back for the same reason that Governor Tina Kotek in Oregon held back her signature on the big tax increase to benefit ODOT. And why? Because it takes away the public's right to refer it to the ballot. That is, it is about as simple as that. And so, in other words, you have the phenomena of people who call themselves members of the Democrat Party, and that would be Bob Ferguson in Washington, Tina Kotek in Oregon. Yeah, members of the Democrat Party who are constantly talking about democracy and how you have to protect democracy. And then the minute they actually get a real test, and they're told, you need to sign this bill because the legislature has passed it and you asked for the bill. And you say, no, I think I'll hold off on signing it because I will be able to take away from the people who want to refer this bill to the ballot. I will take days away from them and make it less likely that they will be able to get it referred to the voters. You say, well, hold on, isn't that democracy in the way that we still have elements of democracy in a representative form of government? It is. Aren't you a Democrat or a member of the Democrat Party? Yes, I am. Don't you believe in letting the people vote on stuff? Democrats believe in letting the public vote on things as long as the Democrats agree with what the public is likely to do. In the case of both Ferguson in Washington and Kotek in Oregon, they want to take away the right of people to refer things to the ballot if they're afraid that the public is going to say no to the Democrats. Anytime they're going to say yes, then the Democrats are all about letting you vote. If you want to say no, they don't want you to have a vote at all. And if anybody disagrees with that, I'd be glad to take the naysayer call. Anyway, glad to be with you on a Thursday. If you want to join the best conversation and talk journalism, it's here every day at 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. Send your emails to talk@LarsLarson.com. And if you're a naysayer, we put naysayers right to the head of the list. Our ex-poll question today, should Donald Trump send in the National Guard to help fix the airport chaos that Democrats have created? What's going on right now? You have American airports who are now getting some help from Immigration and Customs Enforcement when those ICE agents showed up at about 15 different airports around America. The wait times for passengers went from several hours down to, in some cases like Atlanta, less than an hour. But is that going to last? Probably not, because you are now watching TSA agents who are missing their second paycheck. They've already missed one paycheck. They're going to miss a second paycheck as well. Are there people out there who work in the kinds of jobs like TSA jobs at the airport that cannot afford to miss a single paycheck? Yes, they are. You have people, hundreds of them, who have already quit TSA, said, I've got to get paid every 2 weeks. I have bills to pay. And that is completely understandable. So why are the Democrats trying to not only torture people who work for TSA, but torture the roughly 3 million people who fly through an American airport every single day? And the answer is because they want to use this as a pressure point to get what they want out of Donald Trump, which they can't get any other way. And why? Because the Democrats are in the minority in the House, they're in the minority in the Senate, and they do not have a president auto pen sitting in the Oval Office. They have Donald Trump, which means they have almost no leverage point unless they go out and torture 3 million daily air travelers. That is the number of people who take an airline flight every single day in America. Just about 3 million people, about 1% of the U.S. population, takes an airplane flight every single day. We have about 300 million people in the country. So 3 million travelers every day get tortured by the Democrat Party. Should Donald Trump now send in the National Guard to fix the airport chaos that Democrats have created? Absolutely, he should. I don't care what he has, if he has to send the U.S. Marshals, if he has to send ICE, if he has to send the National Guard. Those are the things within his control. And Democrats should start to hear from constituents. Even if you're a lifelong Democrat, how do you feel about having a member of Congress say to you, we're going to jam up the economy, we're going to jam up Homeland Security, we're going to jam up all the airports because we can't get what we want because we did not get majorities in the House, the Senate, or a place in the White House? Now, with all that in mind, consider what's happening in Washington State. You've got Bobby Ferguson, who's decided that he's going to hold back on actually signing the millionaire's tax, not because he plans to veto it, but because he wants to deny the people who would refer it to the ballot the time they need to get it on the ballot. What happened immediately after the millionaire's tax was passed by the legislature in Olympia? Well, the multiple listing service, the folks who list homes that are for sale, they show the number of homes priced at $2 million or more jumped by 65% the day after Democrats passed the bill compared to the same data last year. Now, there have been a number of real estate agents quoted by thecentersquare.com who've said, well, the number of properties that are more than $2 million to buy a home, that's a condominium or anything like that, it's actually a fairly small number. So you can't read everything into this, but here's what the data shows, that on March the 12th, so just about 2 weeks ago, the day after the tax bill passed, there were 53 high-value listings compared to just 32 on the same day of last year in the state of Washington. So it begins to look like all the people who would be affected by this millionaire's tax in Washington State. And if you're wondering, Lars, aren't you one of those millionaires? No, sadly, I'm not. I mean, I guess in some ways I wish that I were covered by this, but no, I'm not affected by the millionaire's tax. I don't make that much money. But the state legislature has decided they're going to go out and tax the daylights out of people who make more than $1 million a year. And they're going to do it in a way that actually penalizes you for being married. If somebody makes a lot of money in your household, you are going to be penalized if you're married. You get rewarded if you are not. And now the people are planning to head for the exits. Is it possible that the legislature in Olympia didn't realize that the minute they started to tax multi-millionaires, people who pull down more than $1 million every single year, that an awful lot of those people, because they have the money to do it, are going to simply head for the exits? I mean, we've seen this happen with foreign countries. We've seen it happen with big states like California, where they decide to raise the taxes on the rich in the state and say, we can tax the daylights out of these people. They can't leave. Only to find out that, yes, they can leave, and they are leaving. Well, Washington State plans to do that, apparently taking it from one of the best tax environments in America to one of the worst in one single vote. You're listening to Thursday on the Lars Larson Show and the Radio Northwest Network.
Something to say? Give Lars a call at 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-HEY-LARS. Now, back to the Lars Larson Show.
You know, I really suspect that you don't need another solid reason to gather up your kids and flee from the failing government-run K-12 public schools. But just in case, I'll give you a doozy. The ongoing rape cover-up at Mark Morris High School in Longview, with the school board spending taxpayer dollars to fund the whitewash. Prosecutors plan a trial this summer for two teens on rape charges involving victims who were their fellow students. But the real crime? The schools knew about the child abuse and failed to follow the mandatory reporter law and bring police in immediately. Well, now the school board says it has hired a third-party investigation. Now, that might sound good. Let me tell you why it's not. Longview Schools refused to say, but I'd be willing to bet they've hired a law firm to do that job. So when you hire a lawyer and the lawyer or his investigators do such a job, a couple of things happen. Number one, anything they find is hidden under lawyer-client privilege and does not have to be disclosed to the public, even under public records laws. Second, it is the job of any attorney to look out first for the best interests of his client. In this case, the ones writing the check. And in this case, the school district, the folks who actually broke the mandatory reporter law. So the very same school district that failed to promptly call the cops when they first suspected a crime and abuse of children is now using the legal system and the community's money to hide its own violation of the law from the same community. Your calls in a moment at 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. Send your emails to talk@LarsLarson.com. Our question of the day is brought to you by Multnomah Medical Clinic. No pills, no shots, no surgery, and get better fast at Multnomah Medical Clinic. Regarding yesterday's interview with the lawyer who's bringing a lawsuit against the ongoing data breach at the Washington Department of Licensing, which has gone on for years now, Tim writes in, Lars, guess who was the attorney general during the data breach? That would be Bob Ferguson. It's too much of a coincidence. They let it go because all those identities enabled somebody to take all the identities and possibly create hundreds of thousands of new voters. Something stinks to high heaven. Signed, Tim S. And my favorite post on X today from Andy No. He posts a story. It was actually reported on by a couple of the Seattle TV stations. BLM activist Kelly M. Lee Carroll, 58 years old, sentenced to just 17 months in prison. And why? Because she defrauded the Department of Veterans Affairs of more than $1 million. Lee Carroll, who sold so-called luxury BLM-themed COVID masks and shirts, falsely claimed that she was bedbound by paralysis and needed constant assistance with all the activities of daily living. Surveillance footage and social media posts show a different story. She was seen walking around on her own while shopping. She spent the money intended for disabled veterans on lavish vacations to Mexico and Jamaica, gambling in casinos, buying cars, and even buying a second home. She's been ordered to repay almost $1 million in restitution. And now today's Daily Grill. I'll tell you what, we're going to give today's Daily Grill to Governor Bob Ferguson, who still has not signed Senate Bill 6346. That is Washington State's new income tax. And State Representative Jim Walsh, Republican of Aberdeen, says that's not an accident. Walsh, who serves as the state GOP chair, says that Governor Ferguson is deliberately running out the clock to shrink the window for a voter initiative to repeal the tax. Guess what? It's the same play that Tina Kotek tried in the state of Oregon. It didn't work in Oregon. It does not have to work in Washington State. So stick to your guns and make sure you get out there and gather the signatures, put this one on the ballot, and vote this big tax increase down. Our best email of the day, you can always send more to talk@LarsLarson.com. Clifford writes in, Lars, I was thinking back to the time when people with different political ideas, including elected representatives, could actually sit down and have a discussion with the other side. Today, that is impossible because the radical left has been pushing a narrative that the right is nothing but a bunch of racist, xenophobic, hateful people. They had effectively destroyed any opportunity to have a civil discussion, much less reach a compromise. Any attempt by somebody on the left to rationally discuss an issue is viewed as a sellout to the supporters of the left. Signed, Clifford Cummins. And to your calls now. Let's go first to Chaz. Hey, Chaz, welcome to the program. What's on your mind?
Hey, Lars. I just read on the Canadian Parliament website that Canada has just passed Bill C-12, which is bound to integrate Canada's border and immigration activities and authorities more with the United States. And I think it's a good news. It also mandates the Canadian Coast Guard we'd interoperate with the U.S. in lockstep with the U.S. Coast Guard. And I think it's a great news because that way we can control the flow in and out of Canada and also control the Canadian border in addition to ours. And I believe it would go a long way towards harmonizing the and creating a North American perimeter, security perimeter, when it comes to customs, immigration, border, and even military. So I'm kind of real and excited reading the news. But
you know what, Chaz? I am too, because when I take a look at what C-12 does, it's actually pretty sensible. It says you would have a one-year deadline for all refugee claims. It would increase the powers of the government for mass visa cancellations and have stricter penalties for irregular crossing. So if you cross illegally from Canada into the United States or the United States into Canada, that you would have a stronger way to push back on that. It also introduces a one-year deadline to make refugee claims, rendering those who wait longer ineligible. Chaz, do you know how many people who were illegally in this country already had been here illegally for years and then under the Biden administration decided years later to say, well, now I'm a refugee? And then the Biden administration handed out refugee status like candy. And the end result was there were people who'd been in this country for years already. If we had that same kind of power to say, nope, if you decide not to file as a refugee for more than a year, at that point, you've run the clock out, too bad. They would also have the power to do mass cancellations of visas and say, we're simply not going to allow you to stay in this country. I think it's very smart for Canada to take that kind of action. And you're right. If we could get a solid perimeter around both Canada and the United States, we're still sovereign countries, but don't let them take advantage of our refugee status. That is what the Democrats do because they see it as the only way that they can win elections. Back in a moment, you're listening to The Lars Larson Show on Conspiracy Theory Thursday.
The Lars Larson Show. Agree with Lars? Great. Naysayers go first at 866-HEY-LARS. Now, back to the Lars Larson Show.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. Well, an Oregon hospital has just effectively fired every single emergency doctor that has worked for that hospital since about 1991 and then handed the keys to a major corporation out of Atlanta, Georgia. And now the doctors are saying, no, we can't stand for this. We've got to go to court on it. Dr. Christopher Polson joins me now. He's vice president of Eugene Emergency Physicians, known as EEP. Dr. Polson, welcome to the program.
Good afternoon, Lars. Thank you.
So would you help my audience understand what's going on here? Because you've got Peace Health, which has said, yeah, we're going to break our agreement. We no longer want to do business with EEP. We want to do business with a company from, you know, a couple of thousand miles away. Is that going to provide a better care for the patients who seek treatment at Peace Health in the Eugene and Lane County area?
Lars, thank you for that question. I would say that most definitely will not provide improved care in our community. The very abbreviated version of what's happened is a group has been here for 35 plus years providing care to our community. We have a very large, diverse group of physicians and PAs. We have trained across the United States. We're all board certified in emergency medicine, and we have a really dedicated group of physicians and physician assistants, or associates now is the term in Oregon, that have they're really dedicated to the area. We, without cause, our contract wasn't renewed this past fall, and an RFP process was begun. The request for proposals was a few companies provided information and submitted bids, and we were not chosen. Importantly for us is that there's been no transparency into the course of events, and we, still a question to all. as really what's happening. And this large corporation called Apollo MD, based in Atlanta, Georgia, was awarded the contract. I can give you more details, you know, about that process if you'd like, but it certainly won't. Well, it won't improve care. There won't be any physicians that currently live in this area that will be providing care.
Well, and that's what I wondered about, because Dr. Poulsen, should we read this from the outside that this is mostly about money and that Apollo MD out of Atlanta is offering a lower cost deal for Peace Health than Eugene Emergency Physicians, and they've simply gone with the cheaper? But if you go with cheaper, should I assume that means fewer personnel or not as well trained personnel or lower compensated personnel? Because for the patients who go to Peace Health for some kind of care, you know, what kind of care are they going to get if the company Peace Health says we got a cheaper offer from Apollo MD?
Yeah, Lars, I don't think that it's necessarily that we don't know that information, truthfully, because there's been no transparency and we have no idea what the other bids were from the other companies. I'll make it clear that Peace Health required us, before we would submit a bid, to sign a non-disclosure agreement. They are the ones that are limiting the ability to even share any of this information. So we don't know what the other bids were. I can tell you our structure is that we basically work at the hospital, but we're not employed by the hospital. We're not paid by the hospital. So it's really hard to fathom that there was a cost savings to the hospital to do this. And I would even propose that more importantly is there's really no discussion about quality from Peace Health or in these RFPs. There's a whole lot of conversation about throughput and best practices and terms such as that, which are clearly not defined and really don't address quality in any way.
Well, if they made you sign an NDA, non-disclosure agreement, and they made everybody else do the same thing, then how did you know what to bid? You know, I mean, if the client is saying, I want you to bid on this, but we can't tell you what the other folks are bidding that you're up against, and we're not going to tell them what you're bidding. And we're certainly not going to tell the patients what we're bidding. So how does anybody know what's going on in that?
I think that you're hitting on some of the key points that caused such consternation in this process is that we don't know any of those details. You know, there's a lot of discussion about scorecards and that the bids were all assessed in an equitable manner, but it's really hard to know that when we don't actually know what that even looked like, and we weren't provided that information before we submitted to the RFP. So it'd be a very atypical and unusual process from any routine request or proposal.
Okay, and when they say that Apollo MD may be viewed as more physician-friendly, or a management services company that is purportedly just providing administrative support, actually exerts more control, translate that from Greek to English for the rest of us. What does that mean for the patients who come into there if Apollo MD is going to do this instead of EEP?
I guess I'd use myself as an example that represents our entire group. You know, I've been in the community for 18 years. I'm not from here. Many of our doctors grew up in Oregon or the Pacific Northwest. You know, I come from the East Coast in Chicago, but came here to be part of this group, a democratic group. And what that means is that everybody that works in my group is an equal partner. And we have equal ownership responsibility and commitment to our organization. And so we work together to do the very best we can in sometimes difficult circumstances in the physical constraints of our hospital. It defies any normal logic that a company from the other side of the country that currently is recruiting randomly from the entire country and physicians that we know are randomly getting messages from recruitment firms to try to fill the spots. It defies any normal logic that would be superior care to a group of dedicated board-certified emergency department physicians who are committed and living in this community.
You have a link to the community. So, in other words, if you're just going to hire hired guns, say, hey, you're an emergency room doc, we got a gig for you in Eugene. Come to work for Apollo MD. And they come and do the work. And when Apollo MD says, yeah, we've got enough people. We don't need you anymore. They can send you packing. You go on down the road. Whereas EEP has the ties to the community that you talk about. There is a difference there. It's just hard to quantify.
Yeah, I think so. And I think an important, you know, there's a lot of, I don't know, I would call it corporate language that's thrown about commonly. And some of that, you know, I think there are important subtleties to the way some of that language is written, which speaks to what you're describing. One of those things would be, you'll if you read some of the statements that have been put out by the chief hospital executive, Dr. McGovern, would be that it's important that, you know, the terms that he uses are to adopt best practices. Well, it'd be nice to know what those best practices really are.
It really would. That is Dr. Christopher Polson. And by the way, I'd be glad to talk to Peace Health about it. We'll invite them to come on the show, and we'll bring EEP back anytime they want. Back in a moment. You've got the Lars Larson Show.
Lars reads every email. No, really. Talk at LarsLarson.com. That's talk at LarsLarson.com. Now, back to the Lars Larson Show.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It's Conspiracy Theory Thursday, and I've got a couple of them for you. But if you want to jump into the best conversation in talk journalism, it's here on the Radio Northwest Network every single day. So, this segment of the show is brought to you by 540training.com. That's concealed carry, home invasion defense, and personal defense. Find them online at 540training.com. And our ex-poll question today, should Donald Trump send in the National Guard to fix the airport chaos that Democrats have created? Now, I know that there are airports, especially here in the Northwest, that have rejected the entire idea that Democrats created this problem, that Republicans want to fix it. And yet, take a look at what's going on. The United States Congress, under the Constitution, is not allowed to spend one single dime without passing an appropriations bill. So what have the Democrats decided to do? They have decided to refuse to fund Department of Homeland Security. And why is that? Because they're angry about the enforcement of immigration laws by ICE. Does their refusal to fund DHS have anything to do with funding or not funding ICE? It does not. ICE is already funded because of the One Big Beautiful Bill. Already got the funding in place. So what gets cut when the Democrats say we're not going to fund Department of Homeland Security? Well, Homeland Security doesn't get funded, of course, and TSA, the Transportation Security Administration at the airports, does not get funded. So what ends up happening? You have people waiting in American airports for hours to be able to get through the security line that routinely does not take hours to get through. But it does when the Democrats refuse to fund the paychecks of the TSA officers. So Donald Trump used ICE officers that he sent to about 14 airports earlier this week, and even the folks like CNN were forced to admit it appears to have fixed the problem fairly quickly. There are a number of other airports like Portland International. Apparently, the amount of traffic going through PDX has been low enough that they really haven't had a problem up till now anyway. But the problem will get worse because TSA officers or agents have already missed one paycheck. They're about to miss a second paycheck. And there are an awful lot of them who understandably cannot afford to go two paychecks without being able to pay their bills. So Donald Trump is saying, well, maybe I'll send the National Guard to help fix that problem. He is considering sending the Guard to airports after hours-long waits for travelers because of the partial government shutdown. Fact is, the Democrats are creating all kinds of chaos, and the people they're creating the chaos for are Americans. About 3 million American air travelers who travel by airplane every single day. I mean, this is an extraordinary country when we put 1% of the entire population on an airplane every single day of the week. Now, some people travel a lot. Some people only travel a few times every year. But imagine, how many other countries are there where 1% of the entire population boards an airplane every single day of the week? And that's an essential service to be provided. And you're already paying for it through your taxes. And then the Democrats say, we're not going to fund it. I'm glad to see Donald Trump actually stand up to the Democrats and say, you are not going to be able to do this anymore. In any case, you'll find the ex-poll question at Lars Larson Show and at LarsLarson.com, and brought to you by Ultimate Truck Services. If you rely on trucks for business, Ultimate keeps your biggest assets on the road and running right. Find them at UltimateTruckService.com. Yesterday's poll, should the U.S. have the power to turn asylum seekers away at the border? 96% of you said yes. Only 4% of you said no to that question. The U.S. Supreme Court will actually decide the question, but that decision won't come until June or July of this year. But the expectation now is that the majority of the justices on the court, including the conservative majority and apparently at least one of the liberals on the court, plan to vote to say you can turn away those asylum seekers at the border. I want to bring this up, though, and have you take a look at it. Washington State is currently handing out zero interest home loans, but only if you have the right skin color. Should skin color determine who gets help from the government in buying a house? Well, the U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development, known as HUD, has launched a fair housing investigation into the Washington State Housing Finance Commission. They did this 2 days ago. And what they're investigating is what Washington State calls the Covenant Home Ownership Program. If that sounds familiar, it's because we've talked about it on this program before. So imagine this. Under the Covenant Home Ownership Program, you get extra help in being able to go out and borrow money to buy a house, but only if you are a person of color. If you happen to be a person like me, a person of pallor with white or pink skin, you don't qualify. And they quote Craig Traynor, who is the Assistant Secretary of HUD's Office of Fair Housing and Equal Opportunity. He says they have notified the state of Washington that pursuant to the Fair Housing Act, Congress passed that law in 1968, half a century ago, following the assassination of Dr. Martin Luther King. It prohibits discrimination in real estate based on protected classes, including race and national origin. He says, in the commission's view, it appears that some people in Washington State are more equal than others. Now, that, of course, is the famous line from George Orwell's Animal Farm, the novel in 1945, that all the animals were equal. Some were just more equal than others. And as he says, this is Washington State with a government-sponsored housing experiment that appears to dole out the spoils based on race and ancestry. Do you know, in all the times we've been talking about this Covenant Ownership Program, I've yet to have a naysayer actually call the show and say, well, that's fair. We should be able to, you know, give special privileges to people based on their skin color. I mean, even the most tried and true Democrat doesn't believe in that nonsense. And then one other issue to put in front of you. That water filtration plant that the city of Portland is building, the one that started out at about $300 million and is now estimated at $2.6 billion, not quite 10 times as much money. Do you know that a couple of years ago, when they were watching the cost of this thing go up, they said we should really have somebody who watches over this and audits it to make sure that we're spending the money wisely? Did City Hall Portland actually agree to do that? Nope, they did not. They didn't have anybody put in charge of it. And as a result, the cost of the project has now gone to $2.6 billion, and it ain't done yet. You're listening to Conspiracy Theory Thursday, and you're listening to The Lars Larson Show and the Radio Northwest Network.
The Lars Larson Show.
Welcome to the...
15 seconds, we'll be on the air.
Live. This is the Lars Larson Show.
President Trump is one badass president. He secured the border at a level we've never seen before.
Honestly provocative talk with Lars Larson.
For our country and for our children, the best is yet to come.
Broadcasting across the Pacific Northwest and covering Oregon, Washington, and Idaho on the Radio Northwest Network.
Lars.
And now.
He is an existential threat to democracy.
Here's your host.
Quiet, please.
Lars Larson.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It's a pleasure to be with you. I'm glad to get to your phone calls and emails. We've got a great opportunity because our friend Josh Markey, the former DA from Clatsop County, had retired, and he moved to the other coast, the right coast of America, except he's come back because he's going to be doing some work in the Pacific Northwest as a DA in a different county. So, Josh, it's good to have your return to the left coast of America.
It's great to be here. I drove through Portland yesterday, and I was really shocked at how 1 year, that's how long since I've been here, how really massively downtown Portland. It's, you know, the old line about if you boil a frog slowly, it doesn't realize. I don't think people realize when they're physically present how much Portland is degraded. And I take no joy in that. I think it's really sad.
No, I don't take any joy in it either. And by the way, my wife and I, in years gone by, we used to go on pretty much about a monthly basis. We'd go to Seattle on every weekend. We'd end up going to Portland. These days, when we drive in there, it is still shocking to see the changes. Let me ask you about something that has to do with Seattle. So this man randomly shot and killed a pregnant woman in Seattle and her nearly full-term baby girl. And yet Washington law says only one of them is a murder victim.
And that's ridiculous. We faced this in Oregon about 15 years ago. And obviously there's very sharp debate in Oregon from pro-lifers, people like yourself, who believe not unreasonably that this imminent, you know, child who might very well have been viable at, frankly, 8 months. In Washington, there's apparently it's no crime at all, or there's no specific crime for that. What we did in Oregon, and it was a bit of a compromise, is that in 2009, we modified the murder laws so that you can be guilty of life without possibility of parole if you kill a pregnant woman who has a viable fetus. In other words, Oregon elevated the potential life to something that could be independently prosecuted, but didn't declare it life per se, because then you're getting into the whole, you know, frankly, it's not a bad compromise, but it's one Washington doesn't have. There is no separate crime in Washington or even special punishment for killing a very potential life, you know, that might even have had viability.
Let me ask you something, though, Josh. Does that give equal treatment under the law, you know, that the Constitution is required to give to Americans? And here's here's the comparison I'd make. If you're a state and you say, well, we're not going to give full credence to this life because this life isn't worth as much. And you could go all the way back to the times of slaves in America and say, yeah, that's really not a person there because that's an individual has black skin. They're not really a person. Is the comparison apt when you say, can a state actually define an unborn baby at 8 months, 32 weeks, and say, but it's really not a person?
The states do that, and I did not realize until I read that story that Washington was that extreme. That means, think about how rare this is, that means Washington is even farther left than Oregon. Because at least Oregon, acknowledges that this is, you know, an imminent life. The problem is, you're right, all lives are protected by the U.S. Constitution, but there has never been a ruling by the U.S. Supreme Court that says a child actually lives or is considered a life. But on the other hand, we clearly have to give a six, seven, eight month fetus who is killed willfully like this. Now, keep in mind, in Washington, they found this guy not guilty or guilty by reason of insanity, so he's really not being held fully accountable. That's a separate issue.
And by the way, do you know where I think we're going to see a defense of this? And it's going to come from the left, Josh, is the U.S. Supreme Court is going to hear the birthright citizenship case. And I've already heard the left start to say, well, this unborn baby inside this illegal alien is entitled to constitutional rights. And you say, well, how can it be if it's not really a person? I mean, so
pick which
argument you want to stick with to the lefties, because the conservatives say that's a life. It's a life, period, end of story. And the left is saying, no, it's not a life till it's born, you know, because they don't want to affect abortion. On the other hand, they do want to declare that it's a life that has constitutional rights if it's an illegal alien baby, right?
Well, I'm consistent on this. I do think a pregnant woman should be protected more than just, you know, someone who has no imminent life in them. But I also don't think that a unborn fetus has a right to citizenship.
No, because the Constitution and the 14th Amendment are pretty clear on that. So in this, and you know what's crazy is California is usually viewed as being a fairly liberal state, and yet when it came to Scott Peterson, who famously or infamously murdered his pregnant wife, it was two murders in California, but in Washington State, it would still only be one, wouldn't it?
Right. It would, and that's, you know, I think that's wrong. That's why we, you know, we're able to get a sort of a compromise here in Oregon 15 years ago.
Yeah, and Washington State will just have to fix it later on. Any other issues that have popped up in front of you, Josh? And what are you going to do with this new gig you've got in Linn County?
Well, I'm not going to be the DA. For the first time in 30 years, I will be an assistant DA or a special deputy DA. I'm going to try murder cases. I'm going to try drunk driving, and I'm going to train new lawyers. The one thing I'll need to do starting next week when I'm on your show is make clear that I'm speaking for myself and not the DA's office. I didn't have to do that for 30 years because I was the DA's office, but I'm not in Albany, and I'll be expressing my own views. Not those necessarily at the Linn County DA's.
So in other words, you have to be able to give your new boss, the actual DA, some plausible deniability of things you say.
A little bit, but, you know, he's a right-thinking American, and you don't need to worry. He's much more on your side than he is mine.
I'm sure that he is, but I mean, this is the kind of craziness we're up against, where we've got all these DAs. I mean, one of your favorites, member of your party, J.B. Pritzker in Illinois, is being asked, well, what about this illegal alien that murdered the 18-year-old girl who was just walking across campus? And he's like, yeah, I don't think we're going to hand him over to ICE. Can you believe what your party has been doing lately?
That's the guy who wants to be president. And the Pritzker family, you know, one of their members, a prominent one, is a very prominent transgender person.
Well?
One of Pritzker's sister's brothers. I don't know what you're supposed to say.
We know she won't be taking part in the Olympics, don't we? Because the Olympics just kicked all the transgenders out. That is Josh Marquis. He is the former district attorney of Clatsop County, former vice president of the National DA's Association, and now is going to be working as an assistant DA again, in this case in Linn County, Oregon. Back in a moment, I will talk about the decision by the IOC to say only biological females can compete in women's events in the Olympics. That just came down today. We'll talk about it next.
Missed the Lars Larson Show? Get the podcast right now at LarsLarson.com. Now, more with Lars Larson.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. Well, a piece of news that I have been waiting for a long, long time, literally years. And it has to do with athletics. It's the kind of thing that I don't really have a direct dog in the fight on. But when it comes to competing at the Olympics, should we allow people who are biological males to compete as females? Now, I know that logic and common sense would tell you, of course not. That doesn't make any sense at all. And that's the argument I've been making for a long, long time. But we finally got the decision from the International Olympic Committee today. I'll get into the details. It only came down a few hours ago. But first, Welcome to the Lars Larson Show. It's a pleasure to be with you on a Thursday. Always glad to take your calls at 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. Send your emails to talk@LarsLarson.com. And if you want to vote in our X poll, should Donald Trump send the National Guard to fix the airport chaos that the Democrats on Capitol Hill have created all on their own? This is not at all the product of Republicans. It is the Democrats who decided, let's jam up 3 million daily air travelers who show up at American airports. 3 million people every single day. Let's make their lives hell. And let's cut off the paychecks of people who work for the TSA. And hundreds of them have now been forced to go and get different jobs. So should Donald Trump now send in the National Guard to fix the airport chaos that Democrats have created? I would answer that one yes. You can answer it any way you like. You'll find the question at Lars Larson Show and at LarsLarson.com. Oh, and yesterday's question, should the U.S. government have the power to turn away asylum seekers at the border? This one is going to eventually be decided by the U.S. Supreme Court. They've already heard the arguments on it, and it's suspected that it's either going to be a 6-3 or a 7-2 vote by the court, but we're not likely to hear that final decision until June or July of this year. But 96% of you joined me in a yes vote on that, and only 4% said no. Now, about the Olympics, and I always tell people if I have a dog in the fight, I'm one of the least athletic guys you'd ever want to meet. Can't play basketball to save my life. I swam a bit when I was in junior high school, but not much more than that. And nobody's going to look at a picture of me and say, wow, that guy's really athletic. But when it comes to the Olympics, do I want to see young women having to compete against biological males who now say they identify as women? In other words, the so-called transgender. Well, the Olympics, the IOC, says that there were no transgender athletes who competed at the 2024 Games. So the question is, will you allow any competition by transgender athletes at the 2028 Los Angeles Games? That was the question. Well, today, the International Olympic Committee made it official. Only biological females will be allowed to take part in women's events at the Los Angeles Olympic Games in 2028. And you know who we have to thank for that? Donald Trump. Because transgender women have now been excluded from the Olympics after the IOC agreed to a new eligibility policy that aligns with President Trump's executive order on women's sports ahead of the games. Eligibility for any female category event at the Olympic Games or any IOC event, including individual and team sports, is now limited to biological females determined on the basis of a one-time SRY gene screening. In other words, if your genetics say that you're a woman, then you're a woman. If your genetics say you're a man, it doesn't matter what name you've adopted, it doesn't matter what you identify as, transgender women will not be competing at the Olympic level. No woman assigned male at birth competed in the 2024 Paris Summer Games in 2024. And it appears that in Los Angeles, this is going to protect the fairness, safety, and integrity of the female category. One of the things I found the hardest to understand about all this is when transgender athletes began showing up in competition, people like Leah Thomas. So Leah Thomas, the swimmer, allegedly a female, identified as a female, was in fact a biological male, and set all kinds of new records for swimming. Now, why is that the case? Because when it comes to swimming, when it comes to running, when it comes to other kinds of athletic pursuits, males have an advantage. The advantage is because of biology. It is not because you're saying men are better than women or women are better than men. It is simply a physical advantage that is built in. And I've used this as an example a number of times. Men managed to beat the 4-minute mile in the 1950s. Women have still, they've come close, but they have not actually beat the 4-minute mile. Now, why is it that when you have 70 years, if you take the point of view that somehow women are just have to catch up, that they haven't had the same opportunities, that's not true at all. If you look at men running in competition, they managed to get a sub-4-minute mile in the 1950s. Women have never equaled that. Men are now, there are some of the top competitive runners who actually do a mile in considerably less than 4 minutes. I mean, it's down to seconds. But the women are not there yet. They may get there one of these days, but they have been tacking behind males all the way. So is it fair to say to women, you have to compete against biological males who have an inbuilt advantage? The answer is no, they should not. So what did the IOC decide? They said access to play a sport is a human right. But after the committee meeting, the executive board meeting, the International Olympic Committee has published a 10-page document that restricts female athletes, such as two-time Olympic champion runner Caster Semenya, with medical conditions known as differences in sexual development. So they're going to take advantage, they're going to take account of that. But if you're simply one of those people who says, I didn't run very well as a male, but now I'm competing against females because I identify as female, that kind of advantage basically takes away from young ladies all those opportunities that we've spent literally decades trying to make sure that young ladies have access to the ability to compete against other women, not against biological males. I'm glad to see the decision by the IOC. It straightens this thing out. And frankly, down the line, you're not going to have to explain why is it that that one athlete in the 2000s, the early 2000s, was competing so very well in those events? Well, because he was not a she. He was actually given an advantage that was entirely political and had nothing to do with real athletics. You're listening to the Lars Larson Show and the Radio Northwest Network.
The Lars Larson Show. Speak now or forever hold your peace. 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-HEY-LARS. Now, back to the Lars Larson Show.
Welcome back to the program. It's a pleasure to be with you. Well, Donald Trump sent Iran a 15-point peace plan. Iran rejected it, mocked him, and wrote his name on a missile. The White House says Trump is prepared to unleash hell on Iran. Is this war about to get a lot bigger, or is there a way to negotiate an end to it? I thought we'd put that question to Dr. Charles Asher Small, who is founding director and president of the Institute for Study of Global Antisemitism and Policy and senior research fellow at Tel Aviv University's Moshe Dayan Center for Middle Eastern and African Studies. Dr. Small, welcome to the program.
Hi, I'm honored to be here with you. Thanks for having me.
So tell me this, what happens, how do we negotiate an end? Is Iran in a position to actually act as though it's negotiating with Donald Trump, or do they sometimes come out with pronouncements that are more for public consumption than they are describing what their attitude is toward any kind of peace deal they might strike with President Trump?
It's a very important question. I think I'm going to answer this in two ways. I think on the one hand, the regime is known now for over 47 years as being an excellent propagandist machine. Mm-hmm. I think they say things for public consumption domestically and also internationally. I think they're waging the only way they can sort of fight back, you know, onslaught of American and Israeli and now other, you know, allies in the region in the kinetic war is to fight back on the propaganda war and to use the threat of oil to buy time for the regime and to build, unpopular sentiment against the war and Donald Trump. So that's what they're kind of using the propaganda for. And then the second part of the question, can the regime negotiate in good faith? Are they in a position even to negotiate with their leadership being decimated? And who will fill the vacuum? Is it the IRCG and the more radical elements of the regime? Or, you know, will there be more rational minds prevailing and really wanting to end the war? And I think you know, we'll see. Donald Trump is saying these days that the talks are going very well, and I guess we'll see how things play out.
Well, see, and that's the thing I wonder about, Dr. Small, is when you have a country like Iran that has taken hostages, that has murdered Americans, that has sponsored terrorism, biggest state sponsor of terrorism on the globe, and on a weekly basis declares death to Israel, death to the United States, on an ongoing basis. If they were to actually sit down and negotiate with Trump, say, well, okay, we think we're going to get the things out of this deal we want to, can the mullahs even afford to say that publicly, that they're about to come to terms with the evil Donald Trump from the evil big Satan?
Right. So an important question. So I think on the one hand, you're right. I think they're, you know, the Iranian revolutionary regime has one foot in the material world and one foot in the metaphysical world. And they believe it's their spiritual obligation to actually destroy the state of Israel and the United States, Israel being the little Satan and the United States of America being the great Satan. And that's their kind of, you know, spiritual religious obligation. So that is definitely part of the goals and mission of the regime, of the revolutionary regime. But on the other hand, I think equally, the regime wants to stay in power. And I guess they're going to be given a stark choice, you know, to do a deal with what they perceive the devil to be in order to stay in power. Or are they going to go down in sort of the Samson option and, you know, they're holy warriors? Are they going to, you know, enter into this holy war to the end of the regime? And I think, in a way, we'll see how things play out. But I'd say there's two tendencies operating now in Iran, and we'll see which one prevails.
So, Dr. Small, you mentioned the Samson option. Would you mind describing that to my audience? Because in a lot of ways, Samson for Israel is a lot like MAD, or mutually assured destruction, was for the old Soviet Union and the United States, isn't it?
Right. So I'm referring to, I think, in the sense with the Iranian revolutionary regime, are they going to go out in a holy war and kind of set the region on fire and go down, you know, fighting? I think that's what I'm referring to. So there's sort of this irrational or, you know, metaphysical view of things. And if they're going to go down as holy warriors with the ship, or are they going to be rational and negotiate some sort of settlement?
Well, Dr. Small, do they have anything left to fight with? It seems like their Navy is at the bottom of the ocean. Their Air Force is non-existent. They're running out of both drones and missiles and missile launchers. So what are they going to fight this war with at this point?
Right. So I think you're right. I think between the United States and the Israeli Air Force, they've really decimated the nuclear weapons program and the industrial infrastructure supporting the nuclear program, the missiles program, and as you said, the Navy, and really the rocket launchers are also apparently up over 90% of the missiles and rocket launchers have been destroyed. So the kinetically, the United States and Israel is decimating Iran's military capacity. But again, I think it goes back to kind of this holy war and this sort of metaphysical quest of this twisted regime, whether they're going to fight to the end and set oil fields on fire and really cause havoc with the world economy as they go down. I think this is the question, and also domestically, can they stay in power? And that's ultimately their goal. And I think after the kinetic war is done, how can they stay in power? You know, after, and there's a segment of the population that are true believers, but here's a government that really turned on its own citizens. We know that they've murdered and tortured tens of thousands of their own people.
Yep.
Just a couple of months ago, when there were millions of people are marching in the streets hoping for change, you know, the brutality is staggering. So what happens, 4 months after the war, 6 months after the war, you know, even people who supported the regime previously, can they trust them again? Can the government deliver basic goods and services as the government is obligated to do? Or will the cracks start getting wider? And I believe the cracks will continue to expand, and they're going to lose domestic power either through the war or in the aftermath of the war.
Well, and in fact, isn't this the best opportunity for the folks who are opposed to the mullahs and the way they've run things for the last 50 years? Isn't this their best opportunity to seize control of their own country again?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. But I think also, you know, we're not on the ground, and I could only imagine, you know, if I was a parent living in an Iranian city now, and given the brutality of the regime, especially in the last few months, I wouldn't want my children or my family taking to the streets to protest just yet. But I think in time the regime will crumble. But
I think you're right. That's Dr. Charles Asher Small. Dr. Small, thanks very much. He is the founding director and president of the Institute for Study of Global Antisemitism. He's also a senior research fellow at Tel Aviv University. You're listening to The Lars Larson Show and the Radio Northwest Network.
Have something to say but don't want to talk? Email Lars at talk@larslarson.com. Now, back to the Lars Larson Show.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It's a pleasure to be with you on a Conspiracy Theory Thursday. Glad to get your calls, too, at 866-HEY-LARS. This segment of the show brought to you by Nick Shivers. If you want to sell your home guaranteed with My Rocket listing, get an instant offer or list for top dollar. It's all your choice. Go to nickshivers.com. That's nickshivers.com. And our ex-poll question today, we put up a brand new poll question every day. Should Donald Trump send in the National Guard to fix the airport chaos that Democrats have created? My answer to that would be yes, he should, because I think it drives the Democrats nuts. They're actually suggesting we're not getting the things we thought we were going to get by shutting down Department of Homeland Security, shutting down TSA and all that. The Democrats intended that they create chaos and they get some political advantage out of it. Turns out the political advantage has not exactly materialized. You can find the X-Poll today at Lars Larson Show and at LarsLarson.com, and brought to you by Ultimate Truck Services. If you rely on trucks for business, Ultimate keeps your biggest assets on the road and running right. Find them at UltimateTruckService.com. Let's go to Jose. Hey, Jose, welcome to the program. Thanks for listening in Pendleton on the Radio Northwest Network. What's on your mind?
Oh, there's a lot of homeless people coming from Portland. That's on my mind.
No doubt. Why are they coming? You're saying they're coming from Portland to Pendleton? Why would they go to Pendleton? I wouldn't think they'd get much of a warm welcome there, would they?
Oh, no. I've been talking to business owners as, you know, for running for city council. And they told me why, one of them told me why they're coming over here is because money.
You mean Pendleton is rolling out the red carpet for the homeless? When
yep.
And how?
Well, there's the crap.
I mean, come on, Jose. You've got a community in Pendleton that's full of ranchers and farmers and people who run businesses that aren't really, I wouldn't think, would be inclined to hand out a bunch of goodies for people who just show up and try to freeload. Portland and Seattle are famous for helping out the freeloaders, but not so much Pendleton. Can you help me understand that?
He mentioned that the city councils and the mayor and stuff is actually bringing in them and trying to get this businesses to be part of the city.
Well, that'd be interesting to see if that's going to work out. Jose, thanks for the call. Let's go to Jennifer, who's a naysayer. Hey, Jennifer, we love naysayers on this program. What do you and I disagree about that makes you a naysayer today?
Today, you know, you were just talking about TSA partial shutdown. You know, with you, it's, you know, Democrats did it.
Can you name me a single Republican that voted to shut down the funding of Department of Homeland Security?
I would think it would be common knowledge. I just don't know. Maybe you just don't want to share it with your audience. But Phyllis went to Trump just yesterday and said, we have a deal. And Trump said no, because it's politically not good for him. But I know you don't like to share that sort of thing. Like,
well, no.
Meaning the truth.
Jennifer, every deal has to be acceptable to the people on both sides of that deal. I mean, I understand the Democrats, they want to get something out of this. They have no sway on Capitol Hill right now because they're in the minority on the House side, they're in the minority on the Senate side, and they don't have the presidency, and they don't have the courts. So they want to get...
The Republican senator went to Trump and said, we have a deal with the Democrats. Trump said no.
And do you understand, Jennifer, that there are deals that some Republicans, there are rhino Republicans out there who would cut deals just to get the thing over with. And I don't believe in that either. Do you?
Say that part again.
Okay. I'll try to make it easy. Jennifer, there are people who, for political reasons, say we want to resolve this problem so there's not a problem at the airports anymore. The Democrats thought that by torturing 3 million people a day who have to wade through this gauntlet of TSA, because we have about 3 million people who fly every single day, that if we torture Americans, it would end up being an advantage. Go ahead.
I'd like to say that it depends. It depends what lens you're looking through. If you're looking through your lens, it is what is said. If you're looking through someone else's lens, it would be Republicans are shutting down the government, TSA, partial, because they don't want ICE agents to be masked. They don't want them to wear body cameras. I mean, that's what the Democrats are asking for.
They don't want them to wear body cameras? Why wouldn't they?
Well, that's what's in this. That's what's in the bill. It's the mask.
No, I understand that, but why would you? And by the way, do you understand, Jennifer, the left is usually the bunch that would tell you all day long, well, you have no business invading people's privacy. And yet suddenly when the left decides that it's handy to go out and threaten the lives of ICE agents and their families.
We saw a chaotic ICE happen under Donald Trump. That's what happened.
How was it chaotic? And why was it chaotic? Because people hold on, Jennifer, was it chaotic because people showed up when ICE was trying to arrest folks and they interfered with the arrest? When you interfere with any of the police, you're going to get chaos, correct? Okay, Jennifer apparently gave up on that note. Let's go to Ray, who's a naysayer. Ray, you're going to have to make it quick. We got about a minute before the top of the hour. What's on your mind and what do you and I disagree about?
Hey, Lars, I listened to you on Tuesday. I heard you say something about Maria Cantwell, which was a senator from the Washington State, saying there were 21 million voters that would be disenfranchised.
Yep, that's what she claims.
You spun that to say there would be 21 million voters that would not be able to vote because they were illegal aliens. What do you have to say?
No, I said there's a mix of people. What Cantwell is saying is if you have a requirement that you have to prove citizenship and picture ID to vote, that 21 million people would not be able to vote. And I said that would be a mix of people who are not citizens, people who are here illegally, people who are here legally but do not have the right to vote because they're not yet citizens, but in any case, people who are not supposed to vote. And I would stand by that. So what?
So I'm about to get married. I have a fiance who is a Washington voter. Her birthright name will not allow her to vote if she gets married to me before this.
All she's got to do is update her registration.
In exactly 15 seconds, we'll be on the air.
Is the Lars Larson Show.
President Trump is one badass president. He secured the border at a level we've never seen before.
Honestly provocative talk with Lars Larson.
For our country and for our children, the best is yet to come.
Broadcasting across the Pacific Northwest and covering Oregon, Washington, and Idaho on the Radio Northwest Network.
Lars.
And now.
He is an existential threat to democracy.
Here's your host.
Quiet, please.
Lars Larson.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It's a pleasure to be with you, and I'm glad to get to your phone calls and emails. It's the Radio Northwest Network, serving the needs of the Pacific Northwest states of Oregon, Washington, and Idaho for almost three decades now. Jeff Merkley has held on to a U.S. Senate seat in Oregon for almost two decades. And yet there's one Marine veteran who says it is time to send Jeff home. Russ McCallman joins me now. He's running for U.S. Senate to get the Republican nomination to run against Jeff Merkley. Russ, thanks so much for your service in uniform to America. Welcome to the program.
Well, thank you, Lars. And it's great to be on your show. I hope you're doing well, and thank you for having me.
I'd be doing a lot better if Jeff Merkley was no longer a U.S. Senator from Oregon, because I think he leaves a lot to be desired, although his fellow U.S. Senator, Ron Wyden, is even worse, because Wyden doesn't even live on the West Coast. He lives back in New York City.
Yes, that's correct. And I think I sincerely believe that the majority of Oregonians feel the same way. I think they've given Merkley a chance to do something, and he hasn't done anything other than, I think, his primary focus is to really just hate Trump, and he skipped the State of the Union address, and I mean, he just has not done a very good job for Oregonians, and I think it's definitely time for a change in 2026.
Okay, so tell me this, Russ. If you get the Republican nomination to run against Merkley, what are you going to do to persuade Oregonians that they need different representation? Oregon had two Republican senators for a long time.
Yes, what I'm going to do is I'm actually a very different type of Republican candidate for Oregon. And what I want to do is to try to explain to the majority of Oregonians, there's kind of an extreme fringe that I'm not going to be able to appeal to, but I think the majority of Oregonians are not extremists. And Merkley really represents the extremist side of the political spectrum. So that's so-called about 20% or so. So what I'm talking to is the other 80% of Oregonians that are out there who actually would like to have a U.S. senator who's not going to be an extremist and not take extreme positions like Merkley does. And so my job will be to try to convince the majority of Oregonians that it is time for a change. I'm a strong believer in term limits. And so I am pledging on your program today, actually, that I will serve no more than two terms. Well, Merkley's already been there already for three terms. He's now running for a fourth term.
Yep.
That's just too long. So
you admit you'd put a self-limitation on, say, give me two terms, and then I'm out and I'm gone.
That's correct. And that's a promise, and that will happen. So I really do believe we need to have fresh representation in Congress in both the House and the Senate. We can see it from Nancy Pelosi and other kinds of individuals in the U.S. Congress how harmful it is to have people there that make a career out of it, that are there for decades. And that was never really the purpose of Congress when we were originally.
No, and in fact, if all you're doing is running to make sure you preserve your spot in the U.S. Congress, you won't necessarily take any really, really bold stances on things, because you'll vote for whatever it is that's going to get you reelected. I'm talking to Russ McCallman, who is a former U.S. Marine veteran, former, not ex. Just be careful about that. But tell me this, Russ, thanks for your service. But what are the things that will make your campaign stand out from, say, Jeff Merkley? And are they some of the issues that are in front of us right now, like getting millions of illegal aliens out of the country?
Absolutely. Well, I have a lot of differences with Merkley. In fact, almost 100%. His positions are so extreme. So I'm a firm supporter of ICE and all law enforcement, really. So Merkley came out and called all ICE officers fascist, which I thought was just unconscionable that a U.S. senator can call federal law enforcement officers and judge them by group and call them all fascist, which is the same thing as calling them all Nazis. So we definitely disagree on that. I support the SAVE Act. I want to see the elections tightened up, and so that we can make sure that only U.S. citizens are voting. I think that's critically important. And as a U.S. senator, I would vote for that today, whereas Merkley is opposed to it. So And Merkley is also not a veteran, so he really doesn't understand veteran issues. I served 3 years of active duty in the United States Marine Corps. I had a 15-month overseas deployment, and received an honorable discharge. So I am a veteran who understands what boots on the ground means. And with the conflict in Iran right now and everything going on, I understand what it means to actually be deployed to a foreign area during the time of war. And that's something that Merkley has no understanding of whatsoever. So Merkley has become a career politician, and by becoming a career politician, he has increasingly gone to the left and become an extremist. I think he aligns primarily with the Democratic Socialist and Bernie Sanders. And I just think the majority of Oregonians are not there. So if they want a U.S. senator who represents the majority of hardworking Oregonians across the state of Oregon, they're much better off voting for myself as a U.S. senator.
Russ, would you mind telling my audience where they can find your website so they can read up on all of the positions you've taken on all the issues? Because you're certainly not going to encompass all of them in a short interview on like today.
Well, that's correct, Lars. And they can find my website online at www.mcgaumanforcongress.org, O-R-G. So that's www.mcgaumanforcongress.org, O-R-G. And I have quite a few position papers on there that explain my positions on a variety of different issues. Almost every one of them are absolutely the opposite of Jeff Merkley, which
It's not hard if you're using common sense to have to go the opposite direction of Merkley, because one of the reasons I've actually run into the senator from time to time, you know, at airports and that sort of thing, and I've said, why don't you come on the program and answer a few questions? He is never willing to do that. And that tells me a lot about somebody when they say, yeah, I've got positions, but I don't want to take any questions from anybody who disagrees with me. I don't think a person like that belongs in a representative position like U.S. Senator.
No, I agree with that. And I'm willing to go to any forum anywhere in all the different counties across the state of Oregon, and I will face the voters directly in even more hostile settings like maybe the Multnomah County area.
Well, and Russ, I got to tell you, I'll hold everybody else to the same rule, because when Joe Kent ran for Congress twice, he was welcome on this show, and then he got the job with the Trump administration as head of counterterrorism. He's now left that job. We reached out to him. He's no longer willing to answer questions. I want to hold people like that to the rules as well. That's Russ McAlman, who is running for the GOP nomination.
On the go? Can't listen to Lars live? No problem. Get the podcast 24/7 at LarsLarson.com. Now, more with Lars Larson.
Why are we doing this? We just don't get it. I mean, these are not rich people. They make around $50,000 a year.
That is John Fetterman, who is a member of the United States Senate. He is still a member of the Democrat Party, although I think he edges closer and closer to the Republican Party all the time. But he's asking the question that I think a lot of Americans are asking, including a lot of Democrats. What in the world are they doing? Why is the Democrat Party so insistent on shutting down Department of Homeland Securities, which has the effect of shutting down TSA at American airports and creating all kinds of chaos? Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It's a pleasure to be with you, and I'm glad to get to your phone calls and emails at 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. Send your emails to talk@LarsLarson.com. And if you're a naysayer, we put naysayers right to the head of the line. Frankly, I find myself more aligned with the person that was interviewed by one of the news networks who went out to the airports to cover what's happening in the TSA and at American airports. This traveler in Atlanta, Georgia, I think summed it up very, very well.
And do you have a message to these lawmakers?
Get out of
get on the ball and make a decision. This is ridiculous. We got people who are going hungry. They can't get to work because they don't have the gas. Let them work. Let them get paid so they can do their jobs.
Exactly so. And then you go to people like Democrat Adam Smith. Now, Smith has been on this program before. He's a member of Congress. He's also a member of the Democrat Party. And in what he says, he admits that the ultimate goal of the shutdown by Democrats of Homeland Security and hence the TSA function at the airports is to punish Americans for voting for President Trump. Take a listen to the way Congressman Smith says it.
I think not paying TSA agents is not advancing our ability to undermine support for Donald Trump and the Republican Party. And that's just a logical thing. It's not 1932 or whatever the hell it is. That's a very logical problem.
Yeah, it's a real logical problem that if you, what you've decided is the Democrat Party is angry that Americans voted for President Trump, that Americans voted for a Republican majority in the House and Americans voted for a Republican majority in the Senate. The Democrats are not happy about it. And so where does that leave us? It leaves us with the Democrat Party simply saying we're going to make Americans pay for having supported a president and a Congress we don't agree with. So consider what the acting TSA administrator, that's Ha Win McNeil, told the Congress about where this puts us at American airports.
We have already lost over 480 TSOs this shutdown, and our call-out rates have accelerated as our workforce was still reeling from the last shutdown. Prior to this shutdown, our TSO call-out rate was 4%. Now, multiple major airports are experiencing days where 40 to 50% of their staff are calling out because they simply cannot afford to report to work.
No, they can't afford it because they've already missed one paycheck. They're about to miss a second paycheck, and it is crippling American airports. And then take a listen to what Democrat Party member Benny Thompson, member of Congress, that he wants to hold DHS hostage because the Democrats want to protect illegal aliens.
Now, why, Mr. Speaker, would Immigration and Customs Enforcement be needed at state and locally run election sites? The Trump administration has tried to make DHS and ICE into their private, politically motivated national police to intimidate travelers at the airport now and voters at the ballot box in November.
Now, you know why that's crazy? I mean, this point keeps being brought up by the Democrats. They keep saying, we want you to promise that you won't put ICE at polling places, to the extent that we still have polling places in America. Many states have gone all to vote by mail. But in those states that still have polling places, they want to promise from Donald Trump and the Trump administration that they won't put ICE agents at polling places. And the rejoinder is usually, well, then you promise you're not going to have illegal aliens voting in November. Why are the Democrats so convinced that they're going to see ICE agents at the polling places? ICE agents go where the illegal aliens are. Now, if the illegal aliens show up to vote in November, then ICE should be there. But if the Democrats are telling us there aren't any illegal alien voters, then they don't have to worry about it, do they? Let's go to Scott. Hey, Scott, you've got a couple of thoughts on the shutdown caused by the Democrats. What's on your mind? And welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks for taking the call.
You bet.
Well, I know there's a lot of people that want to believe that Republicans are the ones shutting it down, because that's what the Democrats always try to say every time they do this. So let me put it in perspective. Like you said, we had a vote. You know, in this country, we vote. We put the Republicans in charge because we don't believe in letting illegal immigrants come here and just do whatever they want. And
yep,
we have rules about it already. We don't have to make up any new laws. I mean, every country has a customs force, and they remove immigrants. Even this basic police force remove it. We're the only country that's violating our own rules and letting people come here. So basically, the Democrats just don't have the vote. I mean, they're the minority because we, the people, voted. That's what we do in this country. We vote. We have a voting right. We're not a dictatorship. We don't have, all this stuff that the Democrats want, where they use force. Like, where they go out and they're in the streets with their brown shirts and they attack our law enforcement when they don't get their way or they don't like them. Or you know, they're basically holding everything hostage. Like you're saying, they don't have the vote, so they refuse a vote. Basically, they can't win the vote, so they refuse a vote and they stall it. And that's not, I wouldn't even call it a democracy, but they would call it democracy. I'm just saying they don't believe in voting. They're against it. They're totalitarians. When they don't get their way, they force it. And this is not how it's supposed to work. They should be, actually, the people right now that are refusing to have a vote should just be impeached from their office because they're not doing their duty. I mean, they're holding the whole country up, and then they're trying to say Republicans are holding up. No, you just don't have the vote, and so you're crying like a baby, and you're just, you know, pulling a bunch of crap.
Well, I mean, imagine this, Scott. I make the point, I make the case to people all the time. They say, we Americans don't want these illegal aliens kicked out of the country. If that's the case, why did they vote for a president whose one signature promise, I mean, he promised a lot of things about a lot of issues, about taxes, about guns, about agriculture, about all kinds of things. But the one big signature promise he made was the biggest mass deportation in American history. And Americans voted for that. So when they vote for that, is there any mystery about what Americans want to have happen? They want the illegal aliens to be gone from the United States. And when you ask, well, how about vote by me? How about, you know, picture ID and proof of citizenship to be able to vote? That one has 70 to 80% support. So you're right. Americans support it. The Democrats don't. The Democrats are standing up for everything Americans don't believe in. And sadly, they're going to reap the whirlwind when it comes to November. And they know it because they want those illegal alien
votes. The Lars Larson Show. Follow the Lars Larson Show on X at Lars Larson Show. You never know what he'll post. Now, back to the Lars Larson Show.
Welcome back to the program. It's a pleasure to be with you on a Conspiracy Theory Thursday. Don't forget that every week we mark First Amendment Friday. We open up the phone lines and every subject is fair game. And today, if you want to join the best conversation in talk journalism, you're always welcome at 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. Send your emails to talk at LarsLarson.com. And I want to tell you, this segment of the show, well, it's brought to you by Oregon Medical Centers. You can also find our X poll question. We put up a brand new poll question every single day at Lars Larson Show and at LarsLarson.com and brought to you by Ultimate Truck Services. If you rely on trucks for business, Ultimate keeps your biggest assets on the road and running right. Find them at UltimateTruckService.com. Consider this. Should Donald Trump send in the National Guard to fix the airport chaos that Democrats have created by refusing to fund Homeland Security? So of all the different things in the federal budget that Democrats could refuse to fund, they have chosen not to fund Homeland Security while America is in the middle of military operations against Iran. You can call it a war if you want to. And while there have been domestic terrorist attacks on American soil and ones that immediately followed our initial attacks on Iran, and the Democrats decide this is the time to defund Homeland Security. The latest word we've got from Washington, D.C. is that it appears they are going to be heading up to a vacation break for the Democrats, that spring break. And they'll take it without having done what they have to do, their job. So Donald Trump is saying maybe he'll have to send the National Guard to the airports for, well, to deal with some of the slowdowns that have been created by the loss of TSA officers. And those TSOs, as they call them, they have now lost 500 of those people because they can't afford to keep working without getting a paycheck. So the question we've framed at Lars Larson Show and at LarsLarson.com, should Donald Trump send in the National Guard to fix the airport chaos that Democrats have created? My answer to that would be yes. You can answer it any way you like. You'll find the question at Lars Larson Show and at LarsLarson.com. I also want to point this out to you. Because the Democrats are capable at the state level of doing things that they will say, this is all about protecting your privacy and protecting the rights of citizens. For example, there was a bill that was passed yesterday in Olympia at the state legislature. It is Senate Bill 5892. And what does it do? Well, if you listen to the Democrats, they say this is all about protecting the sensitive information from voters in the Evergreen State. Let me tell you what it's really about. What it's really about is protecting illegal aliens, and I'll tell you why. Under Senate Bill 5892, any state or local election official who discloses private voter information, things like driver's license numbers, social security numbers, a full date of birth, can face a Class C felony charge. Now, if you say, but Lars, those are pieces of my information. Well, your date of birth is your information. You're right about that. Your social security number, that's not your information. That social security number is a product of the federal government. And in theory, social security numbers are only supposed to be used to deal with social security business, even though almost every loan company in America uses them. Mortgage companies use them. Governments use them to identify people. And driver's license numbers, do those actually belong to citizens? They're assigned to you and me. I've got a driver's license number from the state of Washington, but is it actually my private information, or is that information owned by the state of Washington? Do you know what they're aiming at? They don't want ICE. They don't want Homeland Security to find those illegal aliens. The law also says that the Secretary of State's office is the only agency allowed to respond to requests for data from Washington's voter database. Now, this is where we get to the real crux of this. What's going on is the state of Washington, just like the state of Oregon, is anxious to protect illegal aliens. And we're realizing now that an awful lot of the information you find out about illegal aliens, you're able to track these people down by taking a look at those databases. Sometimes, in some cases, you're not looking for somebody who's a registered voter. You're looking for somebody who exists in all the other data, but they're not a registered voter because, for the most part, illegal aliens are not supposed to be part of the voter database. Now, here's what Steve Hobbs says. He is the Secretary of State for Washington. My office is committed to protecting voter information so Washingtonians can remain confident in security and accuracy of our election system. Washington State has long held a high standard of voter access while running safe and secure elections. Passage of this bill is another positive step toward ensuring that we keep it that way. You know what else they did? They put an emergency clause on the bill. That means the law takes effect immediately. It also means it's very difficult to refer it to the people for a vote. I want you to consider what we already know about the state of Oregon right next door to Washington. We know that they had thousands of people who are non-citizens who were signed up to vote. Do I suspect the same kind of thing is true in the state of Washington? I do. And do I think the state of Washington, a bunch of liberal Democrats who declared the state a sanctuary state, do they want to find that information out when it comes to illegal aliens? They don't. They don't want that information out there. And they certainly don't want it in the hands of the federal government, because they're concerned that if the federal government gets that information, why, they'll be able to track down the illegal aliens that are living in the state. And as you know, the sanctuary states are all about protecting illegal aliens. This is bad for Americans. It's certainly bad for people in the state of Washington. It's bad for people in the state of Oregon to say we're going to protect illegal aliens. We're going to protect their right to come to this country. We're going to protect their right to access and commit fraud against social welfare systems, like what you saw happening in both Minnesota and what we've seen a taste of in both Oregon and Washington. Because what happens? Illegal aliens show up, they're on social welfare programs, and then they decide these folks are ready to be taken to the cleaners. We're going to go in and we're going to pretend to be running a hospice, or pretend to be running a daycare, or pretend to be running an early learning center, or learning without the N, an early learning center. They're going to get that money, and the authorities who are in charge of it, people like Tim Walz of Minnesota, they don't care. They want the illegal aliens to cheat the system. Back in a moment, you're listening to the Lars Larson Show and the Radio Northwest Network.
The Lars Larson Show.